There is a very big decision for voters that are within the Siuslaw School District to make this November. And it deals with the necessity that we have here for a new school. Joining me today is Russ Pearson and Eric Snedden. They are on the Bond Advisory Committee. And their job is to, in part, to disseminate the information about the bond so that folks know what it is they're voting for and why it is we need this money. Good afternoon.
How's it going?
Good afternoon, George.
So, obviously, Russ, we've talked about many different things here. This is a new topic for you and me to discuss here.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about, we've had a bond before that did not pass.
Correct.
As it pertained to remodeling some of the school properties. Now we're looking at, through all the information that they've gone through, all the research they've done, saying we need new buildings. That would be the best and cheapest way to go, better than remodeling. So give us kind of an update on where we are on the necessity to build new schools.
Yeah, the bad thing about that 2016 bond, it really was kind of rushed to the voters out of necessity because the district found out very late in the process that they had won some additional state funds that would have applied had the bond passed. But it forced the district's hand to kind of go to the voters, in a sense, prematurely. You know, we hadn't really done all the due diligence that was necessary to determine exactly what was needed, where things stood with the existing facilities and infrastructure. And the good thing that came out of that after that failed, and by the way, it was the only one out of four bond measures in Lane County that year that failed. All the other three passed, including Junction City, Cottage Grove, and I'm not remembering the fourth, but
that's okay.
But there you go. So since that time, the district has really done its due diligence. They received several Oregon State Department of Education grants that paid for facilities assessments, seismic assessments, engineering assessments. We know much more than we did in 2016 about where the school is. There are several major systems, infrastructure kinds of pieces that frankly are failing. And it's important to know that that's not the district's fault. My prior role at Lane Community College before I came to Florence was as the Associate Director of Facilities Management and Planning. So I know a little bit about, facilities and what goes into making them sound. And I liken it to, buying a car. And if I had bought a car back in 68, I think, which is when the bond had passed, even if I did, I took it to Valvoline on a regular basis and got the oil changed. I changed out the tires, did brake jobs, did all the basic maintenance that the owner's manual suggests. There's still going to be, over the course of those 50 years, some things that go haywire that, mm-hmm. that maybe can't really be addressed. Or if I do, it's going to be an incredibly pricey fix.
Right. Or updates in technology that make it a better
exactly.
idea to change.
Exactly. Yeah. And all of that has happened in the case of the schools.
Anti-lock braking systems in the analogy of the car, for example.
Right, right. Yeah. For example, there's propane is one way of providing, fuel to different systems within the high school. Some of those propane lines have broken that are underneath the concrete slab. They're embedded in the slab. Well, that's not an easy fix.
No.
So there's a lot of things like that. The mechanical system, the electrical system, all of these things are failing. It's not the district's fault. They've done a great job of maintenance. Add to that, all of the cobbling that's been done over the years as the student population has grown. There are a lot of spaces that, frankly, probably shouldn't. They wouldn't meet code today.
It wouldn't be that. Classrooms in a normal situation.
Exactly. Yeah. There's not good ventilation. There's no outside windows. And both of those things impact a student's education. All of this stuff takes, when taken into account, we now know that it would cost a little bit more to remodel and sort of reset the clock on the life of the facilities than it would, in the case of the high school, to simply abandon it and start over, frankly.
So, Eric, what kind of things at the high school are planned? What kind of construction things? I know we talked about it before, but kind of give us an overview of what the bond is going to cover as far as the high school goes.
Sure. So one of the things that the district is adding back is technical jobs like construction, increasing a lot of the technical jobs that are lacking in this country today. A lot of emphasis
skilled jobs.
Skilled jobs, yep. So our current school has a great automotive area in it, but it is not, it lacks the space for construction and technology type things. So those are one of the things that we're looking at adding there. It's addressing security situations. Unfortunately, we live in a time where we have to think about those type of things, about making sure our kids are going to school in a safe school that feels like a school, doesn't feel like a prison, but feels like a school, but is safe for them to go to. Making sure they have adequate student life area for them to move from class to class. I have a unique situation of my parents were the first group of students through the current high school. So when I went through, I graduated in 2000, I was going through the school as it was being, you know, places were being carved out for classrooms that weren't supposed to be classrooms. So you go into the library today and the loft has all been converted into classrooms. It gets pretty stuffy. So there, it's moving from English Lit Hall to the Art Hall can be quite a chore because for safety reasons, they removed the lockers from the mall area because of line of sight. Now put them in two hallways that really were not designed wide enough for lockers. So you add lockers and then you add students and then you add flow from class to class. It gets pretty constrictive. So making sure that the new building would have adequate space for student flow and all of those things.
Well, I think one thing to be, you know, noticed here is that the fact that we do have more students, we are growing, the school is growing. So that's a good thing. And people should look at that and go, okay, you know, this is an opportunity for us to really affect a lot of kids in their education. So why not put our best foot forward and do the right thing?
Well, and you have to look at, you have to look at, our district does an amazing job of protecting the investment of the taxpayer. You know, our main focus in the school district is educating students. However, with that, you still have to maintain the facilities for them to be educated in. When you drive by, you know, all of our schools, they are very well taken care of. The roofs are done when they're needing to be done. You know, I walk into the high school 18 years after I graduated, and it looks the way it did when I was there. My dad goes in there, I don't know, 40 years. Maybe I'm off on that. I think I'm actually giving him extra credit. He might be more than that. But, you know, it looks the same as when he was in there for the most part. Our facilities team, it's a small team, do an amazing job of keeping things looking great and functioning. And so when the average person who doesn't spend a lot of time in any one of our schools goes into there, it's very easy to look at the buildings and say, there's nothing wrong. But when you start peeling back the wallboard and looking behind, you see where the deficits are. They couldn't run any more technology in there if they wanted to because the conduit space doesn't exist. The way that it was built, you know, getting the Wi-Fi to work throughout that building, it's just not set up to move, you know. When I was in biology, we were not allowed to touch the knobs on the desks because the propane lines were corroded then, you know. And so it's one of those things where addressing all of those things, they're all internal. They're not external. They're all internal. There is a huge, you know, that school was designed, I think, preliminary for a junior college. It was kind of adapted for a high school when it was built. You know, for a high school in the Northwest, it's not the greatest floor plan. And that's something that we've really focused on in our meetings when we've talked with the architect, when we've talked to the community, when we've talked to students. You know, how do we keep good lines of sight and good student flow and all of those things?
And George, if I can pick up on something Eric mentioned a moment ago, you both were talking about career technical education. And that's where I get excited a little bit, wearing my hat as the dean at LCC's Florence Center. We have a dearth of career technical education space in our facility, and we're literally right next door to the high school. We have a good relationship with the high school, and, you know, if we can get this passed, we have a wonderful career tech facility available to us right next door. You know, we can work closely with the high school to help get the faculty certified for College Now courses, which gives high school students free credit for college while they're in high school.
Yeah, nice.
And we also can, you know, use that facility in off hours for our own college classes. And, you know, if a student, for example, managed to get a year of a culinary arts degree under their belt as a high school student, which they could reasonably do, you know, we can offer that second year as a community college course, and they can walk away without ever having left Florence with a 2-year culinary arts degree.
So I know that we, like talking about the analogy of the car earlier and the way things have changed. I mean, if you look at technology and science and everything, about the only thing we haven't done so far is transport someone from one place to another, you know, like they do on Star Trek or something like that. But what kind of accommodations are being made for, say, the change to more electric-based vehicles versus the gas engine vehicles for that technical? Is there you know, forethought in there to go, okay, these are the things we're going to be facing in the next 20 years, so when we build this, we have to put that into account?
Yeah, STEM education addresses a lot of those things, and that's stuff that we are looking at, making sure that we have the facilities for, you know, to really encourage and foster that type of education. And that's, you know, a lot of how we teach is different, you know. When I was in school, everything was stand at the front of the room and instruct and listen. Well, I wasn't an awesome student because I didn't learn that way. You know, I got to college and found that things were a lot more collaborative and I excelled there, you know. And so, there's a lot more focus now on collaborative learning. And our school isn't designed for good use of that. So STEM, of course, comes from a lot of good information comes out of collaborative work. And so that is something that we've looked at in the design. Our classrooms for the high school are actually quite small. We walked through one of the new middle schools over in Springfield that they just built, just to get an idea of what was going in. Our high school classrooms are actually smaller than their middle school. And as you move from elementary on up, the rooms get, you know, larger to accommodate for more things. So.
And bigger kids, and bigger, you know, when you think about it that way, too.
You know, I think, too, it's important to note that the high school is getting – the district is really getting into – those kinds of advanced technologies at a good time. You know, green technology has advanced a lot over the last several years. I know at Lane, you know, LCC, a part of their sort of core identity is being on the leading edge of some of those technologies. We were one of the first community colleges in the nation to have an electric vehicle recharging station, for example. But the problem with that, you get into being on the bleeding edge rather than the leading edge. You know, you're so out far and out there farther in front than the technology sometimes. You don't know, you know, whether beta or VHS is going
right.
To
it's
win.
Not always best to be the first one doing
exactly.
Something.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of those things have been established now, and the district's coming in at a great time where we know where some of those technologies are headed and the right kinds of equipment and facilities can be constructed.
So nuts and bolts of it then. Let's talk dollar amount here. The size of the bond is what?
$108 million. I think Eric's got a...
The exact is $108,617. And let me tell you what. The bond advisory committee worked and worked and worked to make sure that we could get that number the lowest we possibly could and still do what the district needs to do.
I think we trimmed $26
million. $26 million, yeah. You know, down.
Wow, I could do a lot with $26
million. Well, we eliminated $26 million worth of... things that we would have loved to have had, but felt that we needed to get the voter for the tax base. We needed to make sure that we needed to get down as low as we possibly could to get done what we need to get done. When we sat back and realized that it's cheaper to replace the school and it's better for student impact. You know, if we want to do a remodel, that is expected to do 2 bond cycles in 5 years. Well, that's for a freshman 1 year to graduation, that's their entire high school career in a construction zone. That's not good for learning. Whereas if we do a replace, it's 3.7% cheaper to replace.
Right.
And about a 2-year timeline for a whole new school. So
it's projected that incoming freshmen will graduate from that
new facility.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, and it's because I was in elementary school when the current primary school was built. And I remember, you know, that was a long time ago. I can't remember really how long that time frame was.
But I can
remember my fifth grade year was we would sit and our pencils would rattle off our desks as they were doing construction and stuff like that. And the teachers, I think we're even a little bit more gray-haired at the end of the day because of trying to get focus returned to what the, you know, task at hand was and not looking at the construction site and all that kind of stuff. So I know what it was like to be a fifth grader going through 1 year. And if you could imagine a high school going through your entire career life of dealing with where can I park today? Where can't I park? What, you know, what hallway can I use today? What hallway can't I use today? Mm-hmm. That's unrealistic for us to ask for from our students. And right. If it's cheaper to replace, why would you make them do that anyway?
So what are, because we don't have a whole lot of time, but what are some of the things that people need to know? What are some of the main points, you can run them down, that are going to encourage people to go, yes, I want to vote for
sure.
this bond?
So for that 108, you're not getting just a high school. And that's what I think a lot of people think you're getting. You are getting a new state-of-the-art high school. You are also getting seismic changes in the current elementary school that will bring it up to current seismic code. The South End Elementary, which was built in the 60s, is the oldest building in our district, and it's cheaper also to take it down and replace. That school was built as a separate school. The elementary school was built as a separate school. They now function as one. But, you know, you don't want those little feet walking back and forth between two separate buildings. So it would take down the old part of the building. The new portion would attach to the current structure, and it would give it an effective life of zero. So where you have a 25-year-old structure, you're bringing it back to zero. So in essence, the same at the middle school. There's some water intrusion that has to be addressed. There's a PE field that has to be addressed. There's some heating that has to be addressed. But it's a pretty new building, and it's doing its job very well. There's just minor things there. But really what you're doing is getting a zero effective life elementary school, a zero life middle school, a zero effective life high school. And that would allow the district then to not spend so much of its budget, its maintenance budget, on fixing antiquated equipment at the high school, and now would allow them to actually budget and save. So when they needed a roof on a building, they're paying for it. They're not going to the bond. They need to fix some window flashing. They don't have to, you know, not buy something that the students need because they need it to do window flashing. It sets the district up for more success financially.
And I guess the studies have been done on the effective teaching in new classrooms versus the old classrooms. And apparently they've come up with some really good information that says this is what we need for students to learn in today's environment.
Natural light is key. I mean, even in healthcare, they found that out. You know, hospitals are built now with more natural light in the rooms because it helps with healing. It's the same thing with education. You know, you go around anywhere, you're finding natural light is really the key on a lot of architecture and construction nowadays, where our schools were built, windows were quote unquote expensive. So they were there, but there weren't a lot of them. You know, I went to middle school. In the old middle school, there was nothing but a wall of windows. And I noticed it when I got to high school. And a lot of us did. So that was something that we also were looking at, is making sure there's a lot of natural elements.
And the Federal Department of Education actually has some statistics about that. And I can't remember. I can't find it here quickly in front of me, but I think it's between 20% and 25% enhanced effective learning for students who have both access to natural ventilation and natural lighting.
Pretty cool. What's the bottom line for taxpayers? What is it going to look like as far as you know, our taxes? How much is it going to affect that?
So they will definitely go up. And I think it's important to contextualize that. The last construction bond, I think, was in 1999. That was for the middle school,
which is getting paid off completely before this next one would go in. So you're not adding to something. The middle school is just about paid for.
And it had the bond passed in 2016, we still would have had, you know, 2 or 3 years of sort of double dipping there that would have taken place. So again, you know, that helps in my mind to justify the district kind of reaching for this kind of a bond. It's necessary. You know, right. It's been 20 years since the district has asked the voters to help in this way. And this is for construction. You know, this isn't money that can be used for other things. It's not for operations. It's not to enhance administrator salaries, anything like that. It's simply for construction. So with that said, and all of this is best conservative estimates. If the bond passes, $2.72 per $1,000 of assessed property value is the estimated rate for property owners. It's also important to know that following Measure 5 back many, many years ago, the assessed property value is much less than the market value. So it's not like, you know, I could sell my home for $500,000 and I'm going to be assessed for $500,000. It's going to be significantly less than that.
Right. Well, that doesn't sound, and again, that's the other bond will be coming off of that.
So, that's correct.
And I think what it's in the dollar something range now, I think I remember Andy was saying
up
the last year.
It's up close to a dollar, yes.
Yeah. So you're adding about $1.72 somewhere right
per thousand.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. That's correct.
All right. Anything else we need to know before is there any meetings? What about how can people get more information? Where can they go and hear?
I want to direct everyone to the website. It's Siuslaw, siuslaw.k12.or.us. There are links on there that talk about the projects and actually spells out what each project is. There's a survey on there that we really want people to take. Because what happens is those results from that survey come back to the Bond Advisory Committee, and it's helping us form, what is important. It's our direct link of knowing what the voter is thinking. So,
and the Bond Advisory Committee is very interested in getting out in the community to do two things. You know, part of our job is to disseminate information, as you said, and we want to give folks the information they need to make an informed decision. That's really important. And the second thing is to provide the community's feedback to the Board of Education, you know, the school district board. So we're doing those two things. If you are part of a group, whether it be a homeowners group, one of the service clubs in the area, you know, we would love to schedule a time to come and talk to your group about these things. There are a couple I can tell you right here, right now. One is September 5th. We're going to be presenting to the Florence Area Community Coalition. So that's a group of a lot of the public service kind of entities and agencies in town, the nonprofits, those kinds of groups, and the public is welcome at that event. Can't remember the time right now, but we'll be getting word out. And then secondly, this isn't specifically about the bond measure, but the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce, in our noon forum, we have a monthly noon forum. It takes place at 11:45 at Best Western Pierpoint Inn on August 9th. That's a Thursday. We're going to have a presentation talking about critical thinking and business cost analysis. And we're going to use the bond measure as sort of a pilot to talk through some of the issues. It's a complicated issue, and we want people to understand all sides of it and to make really an informed decision. So, a lot of us who are on the advisory committee are, of course, in favor of the bond. But there's folks who will have good reason to think otherwise, and if we're all getting the same information, we really understand what's involved, then we can make an informed decision.
Well, and I think when it comes down to the kids, I'd like to see us do as much as we can for the kids in our community, because they're the ones who are gonna, take over one day. So we want to make sure they're nice and educated.
Well, and they're paying Social Security. So those of us who are older, getting Social Security.
That's right.
And
there you
they're
go.
Becoming our medical providers.
And, your care providers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I have, I have two young ones in the elementary school now. So, I've got a first grader and a fourth grader. And, I see how the school is utilized and how it's taken care of. I've been 18 years since I was in the school, and, now I seem to be there all the time, And so I'm amazed, and I really appreciate when I walk into those district buildings and I see how well they're taken care of. And I just think to myself, for people who have never had an opportunity to step in one of our buildings, or it's been a long time, what we do to protect the investment. And it's over $1 billion worth of infrastructure there that we are asking people to maintain and take care of. That is a huge number. And our district does a phenomenal job at it.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here and getting us updated on this. And again, if you want more information, you can go to siuslaw.k12.or.us. Get the information there. Look for notices about meetings where you can find out more information, where you can ask questions. Those will be coming up all the way, I believe, through the November election, correct?
Absolutely.
And if I can add one thing, we really want people to go to that district website. The district can only give facts. They can't give, they can't sway you.
And it's,
yay,
it's
or
been
nay.
Vetted by the Secretary of State.
Of
by
state,
the way.
Yep. So please go there. Don't use social media.
Right, get your
because
facts
it's
on that.
Almost everything I'm seeing on social media is almost all wrong, and that's
no,
not. I know, and
not social media.
And that's imagine. and that's not good. I mean, that's not good for the community. It's not good for the district. You know, please. So please do your research. The district has done a very good job of making sure that the bullet points are there. Whatever you're looking for, you don't have to hunt. You can pull up the main page. It's right there. Please check it yourself.
Yeah, don't trust that friend that you like but never met
right.
and don't know exactly who they are. So.
Or the thread of people who just, you look at the main thread and you're like, no, that wasn't right to begin with. So there's all this information that's wrong off of it. So
thank you both for being here. Eric Stanton, Russ Pearson, appreciate your time and efforts on this, and good luck for November.
Thank you.
Coming up next on our August edition of Our Town, we'll be talking National Night Out with Chief Tom Turner and Jamie Gorder.